Hey to all you fish enthusiasts out there. Whether you're an avid angler or just curious about fish, we'd like to welcome you to Fish of the Week, your audio almanac of all the fish. It's Monday, April 15th, 2024, and we're on a week-by-week tour of fish across the country with guests from all walks of life. I'm Katrina Liebig with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Alaska.
And I'm Guy Eero, and you may know this week's fish as the common sucker or commerson sucker. It's just like Rodney Dangerfield in that no one gives it any respect. We're talking about the white sucker.
Caddyshackostomus. We have two guests with us. We've got Tyler Winter and Rick Brusewitz. Tyler is a native fish conservationist, angler, and co-founder of Native Fish for Tomorrow. Tyler joined us in season two for Big Mouth Buffalo. Rick is the Aitken Area Fisheries Supervisor with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. So welcome to you both.
Hey, thank you.
It's great to be here.
Okay, so for folks who haven't seen a white sucker before, what does this fish look like in its day-to-day attire and also when it's all gussied up for spotting?
Well, I just caught one yesterday, and they're really like the classic sort of sucker fish, a little nondescript, dark brown or bronze above, and a white belly, probably 12 inches to maybe a really big one's 20 inches long, and very fusiform, very torpedo-shaped. Their spawning coloration turns out to be really variable.
This time of year, the females will be kind of drab-colored, brown on top and a little, you know, pale on the bottom. But the males will have a very dark, either rosy red or brown stripe on their side. And they'll also have...
Tubercles?
Tubercles, yes, on their sides and fins that are only present during spawning season. It's really good for us. We spawn these fish to collect eggs once in a while. And they make good grippers when you're grabbing a hold of them.
Oh, okay.
Right, yeah. Tyler?
That's true. And oddly enough, so I mainly catch them by angling, and I very rarely catch them when they have tubercles on them. I have oftentimes seen them spawning with a dark stripe along their side, and occasionally they'll have that red stripe too. And every time I fish to them when they are colored up like that, and as we say, tubed up, they won't bite.
Tubed up. I like that.
Yep. The sucker angling community, that's always part of the spring report. It's like, I got some white suckers. They were tubed up. You got to know where you are in the spawning migration. They don't seem very hungry when they're on the spawn.
What's it like to see them in the river during the spawn?
Oh, it can be really beautiful. The easiest way to find them is to look for eagles or ospreys in the springtime, especially in the boundary waters or someplace where you've got a lot of water and a lot of streams. You will find 5-6 eagles perched by every stream that has suckers.
The act of spawning in these streams, sometimes the stream is quite shallow. I mean, like, you know, 6 inches deep. And you get these fish that are almost 6 inches tall coming up into the stream, splashing going on all over the place. So that part is really pretty cool.
That's cool.
A couple of years ago, it was just a tiny little stream. I think I could have jumped across it. And there was a bunch of colored up, tubed up suckers that did not want to eat, and they were waiting until dark. There was a little bit of black bottom and some sand, and they wouldn't go out on the sand while it was light. They were like milling around in the shadows. And when we came back across this portage 4 days later, there were fish remains scattered everywhere. The eagles had been...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you could smell it as you paddled up. The fish had risked everything to pass on their genes to the next generation. They're one of the first fish to spawn in the springtime, which is part of the reason that me and my family target them. We can catch them as soon as the ice is off where the stream goes into the lake. It'll melt off the ice there first. And every year, they're the first fish I catch. I've got pictures of myself with my feet on ice fishing in open water, holding a white sucker. Because they'll bite just as soon as they can, just as soon as that stream opens up, they get that biological environmental signal to start migrating upstream.
I remember the fish would come in on a regular basis when the wild onions were starting to sprout in the woods. It was actually a really cool thing because you'd get that scent also at the same time that the suckers were coming in.
Yeah, for me, it's about also when the maple syrup run ends. It's about the time, like, to when the trees' buds break It's definitely time to be out, find a creek.
One thing that is important to all of these fish species is, besides the temperatures, is daylight length. The photo period is an important component for spawning as well. The other thing about suckers that's really cool is their range. I mean, it's a huge range. Obviously, up by you in Alaska, you've got that long-nosed sucker, which is a really close relative to the point that you can get hybridization between the two. We see long-nosed in some of the other Great Lakes watersheds, but the white sucker is in every single watershed in Minnesota, and anything connected to the Mississippi or the Atlantic or the St. Lawrence or I think Hudson Bay drainages have a chance of having white sucker in them.
In the springtime, if you're in the central United States in the Mississippi River Basin and you see a fish with a dark stripe on its side, that's almost certainly a white sucker, unless you're in the long-nosed sucker range. Those two east of the Rockies are the only two that they get that dark stripe.
That's cool.
Yep. They're native to a lot of places east of the Rockies. In the lower 48, they're probably one of the most widely distributed species of fish you're going to find. They're really widely distributed, but they're kind of locally abundant. I actually don't catch very many in the Mississippi. I catch them in smaller streams and lakes mostly. But maybe it's a stream that's transitioning from trout to warm water, or a stream that is connected to a lake. Out on the Mississippi, we mainly catch red horse, and we'll catch 100 red horse or something like that into one white sucker on a large river like the Mississippi. But then on the smaller streams, the tributaries to the Mississippi, it's reverse. We'll catch white suckers and never catch a red horse.
Interesting. You talked about how the eagles cue in on this white sucker migration. As we know, eggs are a super nutritious meal for things that are in the water. So because this migration is so early, do you see other things start to follow them up, trout or what have you, to feed on the eggs, or is there not really a ton of that?
I don't fish for them where there's also trout, although I've seen trout eating red horse eggs. Usually that question is flipped, Guy. Usually people ask me about the suckers eating other fish's eggs. They're often accused of such things. I've only found one paper that really dove into that in a detailed way on Lake Erie. They sampled fish from walleye spawning reefs, and the white suckers ate 4 walleye eggs, far fewer than the yellow perch did.
Up here in Alaska, we have some wolves that will actually take salmon during the salmon run. Are there other wildlife species that are eating these other than maybe eagles?
Wolves in Minnesota actually eat suckers. The Voyageurs Wolf Project discovered that. They were wondering why wolves are spending so much time at streams.
Besides the wolves, you got black bears in the area that I'm sure take advantage of them when they're thick. Raccoons and other smaller animals when those suckers die, because there's a significant portion of mortality happens during the spawning run. And then the eagles and ospreys that are there at that time of year, especially the eagles. Besides our resident ones, we also have migrants coming through right about that same time. They're important food for a lot of critters in the state.
Yeah, not to mention otters and mink. Basically, if people like an animal, be it an eagle or an otter or a bear or a wolf, you know, something charismatic, it's probably eating a sucker.
So people should like the sucker.
Exactly. Yeah,
people should like the sucker. Old Rubber Lips has its value, that's for sure. They're a major forage fish in many of our waters, from the smallest sizes as even fry, all the way up to those big fish that are important for muskies and large northern pike. So for all the fish that are, quote, favorites of Minnesotans, walleye being up, they're hugely important prey in many, many waters, especially in waters that don't have cold water species like Cisco. Cisco can be a huge important component for those fish, and many of our lakes are not suitable for that. They don't have the oxygen and temperature requirements that are needed for those cold water species. And so the sucker kind of takes its place as the soft reed species that offers a really high caloric opportunity for those big predators.
What's your earliest white sucker memory? Or maybe most exciting.
dark secret. I actually didn't grow up in a fishing family. I'm the black sheep. My family is all hunters. And so I was drawn to fishing, and they're all just like, we don't even know what to do with this guy. So I taught myself how to fish, which is probably why I'm the way I am. For me, they were a little bit of a mystery. My favorite memories of white suckers is going out and walking through snowdrifts and hoping the creek is thawed out.
Oh, man, that's cool. You know,
and taking my kids fishing when they were really little. I had a stroller with a fishing rod, like, tucked in it, and would go and catch a fish and get them to hold it because we just had terrible cabin fever. You're always happy to see that first sucker of the spring.
Rick, I know you got some good fishing stories. Would you be willing to share any of those with us?
The most exciting might not be the exciting for the same reason, but when I was about 12 or 14, my cousin Tommy and I, and Tommy, I am really sorry about this. I once speared his boot thinking it was a fish.
It was in the water.
It was in a creek called Mud Creek. And it was well named, so you could hardly see into the water. I had just lost a fish, and then I saw his boot under the water surface, and it looked like it was just moving a little bit. And I sunk my spear into it and put a hole in his boot and a little bit of a hole in his top of his foot.
I could see why you'd make that mistake, though. Kid's boot is, you know, about the same color and shape.
Yeah, exactly. And we were both right there looking down.
So are these gig sort of trident shape, four-prong, five-prong, or what kind of spears were you using?
Whatever I could find when I was a kid. So sometimes it would be a frog gig, or in this instance, I did acquire a much nicer five-prong, sturdier spear than I had on a conduit-type pole. Yeah. And I remember coming home with Tommy. We walked to the creek, and then we came home one time with probably, I don't know, 20, 25 suckers strung on that spear pole. And we walked with it, of course, over our shoulders as we're walking down the road. My parents weren't sucker fans, but we had a friend of the family that was big into smoking fish. And he smoked them and then brought us some also.
Oh, awesome.
It was just really, really cool. Except for the fact that they're kind of bony, they do taste really good. I've had canned and pickled and smoked white sucker, and they're awesome. Another thing they do is they'll grind them up and put them into a fish patty as well.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds good. Burger.
Yeah.
We do a patty or a fish ball, kind of like a hush puppy, or if I'm feeling really fancy, I will put my sausage stuffing attachment on the grinder, and I'll actually make homemade fish sticks.
Oh.
So kind of an elevated fish stick. And when you do fillet them, the fillets are very white. They are a firm white, flaky meat, but like all the suckers, they have more defenses on the inside than the out.
So. I got my own stories and stuff, but this is a show that y'all are the guests on, so I don't need to get into that.
I want to hear guys' story about suckerfish. You get one guy. How's that?
I've only caught them in a couple places, and one of them was up at the very headwaters of the New River. Whenever I'm new in town, I was new in Boone, North Carolina. I like to just go and walk along the rivers and see what I see. And I look down and there's this hole. It used to be like a weir or maybe a dam or something, but there's this just line of rocks. And just down and settled below that is probably 60, 70, 80 white suckers just all stacked up. And this is like February. I kept coming back until the waters got a little warmer, and they're still there. So they weren't really moving. I don't know if they were residents there or what was going on, but they stayed there kind of all spring. And eventually I started fishing for them. I went out, I got worms, I got flies, I got whatever I could. And I managed to catch them both. I caught them when they were tubed up using worms. I caught some tubed up males using worms. And then I caught some on gold-ribbed hares here.
Oh, I've caught them on an artificial, wading a little stream. I was looking for some sunfish, and I had a little piece of pink plastic worm on, and I saw some white suckers, and I thought, oh, that's worth a try, and dropped it in there, and that like little piece of pink plastic like rolled on the bottom, and that sucker started looking at it, and then I couldn't believe it. But getting a sucker on an artificial is an achievement. They generally are more cautious and a little slower to eat than some of the game fish that have, let's face it, a much bigger mouth and more predatory.
I was down at a conference one time in Georgia, and a guy came up to me who was a friend of mine, fan of the show, and he was so quick to brag a long-nosed sucker on a fly, and he has some like big red chironomid. And I was very impressed. And like you say, catching a sucker on an artificial, that's one of the hardest things to do in angling, I think.
I agree.
Like, what percent of Minnesota anglers do you think have angled for and caught a white sucker?
Oh, that's a good question. There are a lot of people who fish for white suckers before the walleye opener. I would say they're like seasonal or opportunist rough fish anglers. And there are plenty of places in the metro or on rivers and creeks around Minnesota where the locals know that there's really good fishing for 2 to 4 weeks in the springtime. Rick, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, when they do creel surveys, they ask people what they're fishing for. And the most popular fish is walleye for the answers. But the most popular answer is for whatever bites.
Mm.
But because for whatever bites isn't a species.
It all depends on the water body. If they fish rivers, there's probably a 90%+ chance that they've caught a white sucker while they're walleye fishing, while they're catfish fishing, and smallmouth bass fishing. If you're a trout stream fisherman in the southeast part of the state or in western Wisconsin, there's plenty of white suckers living in those streams too. They catch them on occasion as well. I know I did when I was growing up. On the other hand, if you're a lake fisherman and spend all your time out there, it's a relatively small part of the catch.
Yeah, if you're fishing on a lake, the suckers are not as aggressive as a lot of other fish. And so you really have to have your bait going pretty slow and close to the bottom. And I find that on lakes, if I put a bait out like that, I'm going to catch sunfish and maybe bullheads first. I've only caught one white sucker directly out of a lake where that white sucker actually got to my bait before the sunfish did. For me, it's really a seasonal thing. When these fish come out of the lakes and into the streams, they're really a lot more available to anglers at that time of year. So I'll fish for white suckers for about a month every spring and then start targeting other stuff on the Mississippi. As Rick said, if you're fishing from a boat, if you're fishing for walleyes or something like that, you could go for years without ever seeing a white sucker. But if you're fishing a stream or a small river, especially in the springtime, you're probably going to run across one. When people do, I hope they have some appreciation for this fish that's just going about its business, providing some ecological services.
Is this a good fish for kids?
I think it's one of the best.
Early in the springtime in town in Aiken, we have the small tributary to the Mississippi. There'll be fish coming up. There will be kids down in our city park and other areas that will be fishing them. As a kid, I mean, I did it myself. I grew up in Wisconsin, but I did it myself, whether it was angling for them, netting with a dip net or with a spear. It was always a great thing to do as a kid. It makes me really happy when I see the kids out doing that kind of stuff too.
Yeah. And it seems like kids haven't developed any biases yet. They're all cool.
It's a fish to catch and there's no spines. They don't have a single sharp thing on them. You know, you can give it to a super small kid and you don't have to worry about a sharp or
folding
purple.
Folding it down and
right. Or spines. And kids get really excited about a big fish. And as we grow, we tend to get a little biased. And if we move to Alaska, our definition of a big fish probably changes dramatically. But if you're a kid in Minnesota and your biggest fish is sunfish off a dock, well, you get a 12-inch white sucker. That's the biggest fish you've ever caught. You get an 18-inch white sucker. That's a trophy. I fish with my kids a ton, and I love fishing for them with suckers because the kids can play. It's really a relaxed fishing style. There's not a lot of casting and tangling. You let the rods and the worms do the work. And then as a parent, sometimes I don't even get to land any fish. There's a bite and I get to net and the kids run around and catch minnows and frogs and enjoy the springtime. And all they have to do is land fish. As an angler in the fall, they are a really great bait for muskies. Every bait shop worth going to always has a tank of fathead minnows and a tank of white suckers of various sizes. And there you want the biggest ones you can get. Well, locally in the fall, when they're really in demand, they'll be charging $1 per inch for the largest ones. So I worked that out and figured out that an 18-inch white sucker probably weighs maybe 2 pounds, and you're going to get about half that if you fillet it, which makes it the most valuable fish in Minnesota by the pound. You know, I can go to the grocery store and get walleye fillets for $10 or $11 a pound, but that white sucker in the bay tank is $18 or $20 a pound.
I think that the industry in Minnesota is around $2 to $3 million for white suckers. And, you know, that's a lot of white suckers. And at 12 bucks, what'd you say, a dollar an inch?
For the biggest ones, they're a dollar an inch.
You know, that's $12, $13 a pound on the round. That's pushing some of the better bluefin tuna prices.
The smaller ones at the Primo Musky Fish and Tackle Shop in Minnesota, they're a dollar per inch for the largest ones. The smaller ones, you can get a 12-inch one for like $10 or something. If you show up with that for musky fishing, you're not even trying. I was actually hoping to find that number on how many millions of dollars of white suckers are being sold just in Minnesota. That's incredible. That's got to be right up there with fatheads. It's like the most important economic fish in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I'll clarify that a little bit. Is that was the wholesale price to the bait dealer.
Whoa. Mm. Wow.
Now multiply. Yeah.
Thanks.
Because of their distribution and the importance of the bait industry, they're actually one of the better studied of the non-game fish. But there's still so many questions left about them, about why some populations have a red stripe, some populations don't, which I think is interesting that there's still so much to learn about these fish.
Do we know why they're called the white sucker?
I don't think anybody does. I asked my supervisor that just a little while ago if I told her I was coming on, and she had no clue either. Interestingly, in Michigan, they call them black mullet.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And I read somewhere where they can be marketed for sale, and they are sometimes marketed as mullet.
They probably have more names maybe than any other fish, white sucker, black sucker, mullet, and the bait shop. They're called pike minnows, you know, or sucker minnows or something.
That's confusing.
Like,
these fish, are they being reared from eggs for bait, or are they being harvested from the wild and grown out to a larger size, or just harvested at whatever size and then sold at that size?
Yes.
Okay.
A little bit of everything. We actually do some limited amount of harvesting of eggs ourselves because we use the fry once they hatch to feed baby muskies for our muskie rearing program. Bait dealers also collect eggs from spawning runs. And while they're tubed up, they are harder to catch unless you use nets or spear or archery too. They're pretty popular from the archery crowd as well.
Are these fish used in hatcheries to help raise other fish? Are they used as surrogates for evaluating any other fishes?
They certainly are used for raising other fish, and that's specifically, and I think limited to muskie and possibly hybrid muskies. But that surrogate part, the cool thing for me as a fish manager is that we don't stock white suckers all over the place like we do walleye. And yet white suckers have a very similar habitat requirement to walleye, just maybe a little bit warmer. They're a little more tolerant. They use the same habitat, basically, for spawning. When we monitor lakes in the area, we have long time series across many, many decades. And we can see over time as populations change. And when I see my walleye population, if you will, going down, now I have to wonder, was it a habitat issue or is it an overfishing issue or, you know, what's going on? And one of the things I do look at regularly is the white sucker trends because they use that same habitat. And so if they're not doing the same thing as walleye, then the habitat's probably still there.
Might be fishing then.
Tracking the same. Yeah, because anglers aren't harvesting to the same level that they are walleye. It really helps to answer questions I have about other species.
If you were to remove white suckers from a lake, say, what would happen to that system?
A good question. We probably wouldn't notice it right away, but other species would likely take up the biomass that's being used by suckers, whether it's yellow perch, which is they have a strong overlap in their food habits, or other species, golden shiners, their abundance may increase or not. And then there's that switch with the predators that they're not able to eat the suckers, so they might prey on other species that we care more about. From the fish standpoint, I would rather keep the suckers there and manage around them.
There have been experiments where they have done experimental sucker removals, and this actually led to ending sucker removal projects because they found it destabilized the food web and did not result in better angling for game fish. In fact, having too many yellow perch actually turns out to be bad news for the walleyes. They have a little more diet overlap with the walleyes than the white suckers. That can actually cause the walleye fishing to decrease.
You're talking about the habitat that's being used by these guys and how it overlaps quite a bit with walleye. Is that true for temperature as well?
I'd say from a standpoint of living temperature, it's really, really close. The suckers are just a little more tolerant. Spawning temperature, white suckers like it a little bit warmer. And so as a progression, a phenology through the springtime of spawning, we start with northern pike. They're the very first. Then walleye, they're the next ones that come in. Then white suckers and muskies at about the same time. We don't have muskies in many of our lakes, most of our lakes, actually. And then right at the end, a yellow perch. So those are the primary early spring ice out, if you will, spawners in my area. Tyler, you might know a little bit more about the red horse. We see some spawning reds here, but I don't keep track of them nearly as close as I can the white suckers.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. I think they start their migration early, but maybe they have further to go. So they start moving into those creeks early, but they're not ready to spawn right away.
Tyler, you've done a lot of work trying to elevate the perception of non-game fishes, suckers in particular, in Minnesota. And so knowing that this fish, people kind of know it from the bait industry, they sort of have an understanding that other fish feed on it. Has it been easier to get people to appreciate the white sucker versus, say, something like a buffalo, or have you not seen any major difference?
I think people really gravitate to the amazing biology of the buffalo, and they're really excited to learn about a new fish, because for many people, the buffalo is like unknown to them. The familiarity of the white sucker may actually work against it. They get no respect because they're not the biggest. They're not the smallest. They're not the oldest. They're not the fastest. But that doesn't change the fact that they're really, really important ecologically, economically. This is a great fish for us to look at and see a little bit of the wonder in it or have some appreciation for it. Because if you can appreciate this fish for all it does for us and for the fact that it changes color so dramatically and can live in such different places and migrates, and that it's the first fish of the spring to really bite and get active, we are going to find wonder in all sorts of other places. Native Fish for Tomorrow is working to raise awareness and bring some appreciation to these native species. And because of the rough fish label, these fish are maybe 50 to 100 years behind on some of the science and management, which we're hoping to change. These fish, more than any other, need the public support and a little bit of respect.
And Tyler, you're doing a lot to further that cause. I saw you on the news in a suit up at the State House.
The House cool. And the Senate.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler's group has brought a focus on these fish that well deserve it. There's no doubt about it. And we are and have been tasked with digging deeper into the management of these species, looking at fish limits and methods, and we are going about that. And we've changed the regulations on a few fish in the recent years. I saw you guys had a podcast on burbot. That is my fish.
Oh, really?
We changed them from a rough fish to a game fish a few years back. We're working cool. now on developing regulations for that species. Similarly with the gar, we now have a 10-bag limit on gar. And so things are progressing. Obviously, in any kind of government agency, they often progress a little slower than everybody likes, but we are moving forward with a lot of that management.
Everyone, time for a minute with Maria. I'm Maria, calling in from Chogyang Lands here in Dillingham, Alaska. Big, huge kagasakun to Tyler and Rick for talking about this white sucker. I really enjoyed hearing about its popularity amongst the people and not only how important it is as a bait fish, but for the ecology as a whole and all the predators that count on this fish for survival. So big Kagasakun, thank you. I was listening to Rick talk about all the ways that he's enjoyed this white sucker, and I couldn't help but drool a little bit about it and just thinking about how it tastes. I've never got to try it, but I really want to make it on my bucket list. I really am excited to try the pickled white sucker as well as in patties. I'm the biggest fan of fish patties, so white sucker fish patties sounds delicious. We'll have to add it to our cookbook that's in the making. And big, huge Kagasakun to Tyler and your organization for educating us on the importance of native fish. I'm excited to hear more about this wonderful white sucker. Get out there, enjoy all the fish, and don't take it all for granted because they are so incredible. Have a good day. See you next time.
And you mentioned a term that some folks might not be familiar with, and that's rough fish. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that is and what fishes currently fall into that category?
Yeah, so in Minnesota, it's 23 species right now, and 23 native species, and then also the common carp. Hopefully in the very near future, those groups are separated. Rough fish, it's sort of a pejorative term that relates back to the old commercial fishing industry, that those fish were sold in the rough. They weren't necessarily fully dressed. They were rough dressed, as what they said. And so that kind of became a catch-all for these fish that are usually bonier than. I always do tell people, though, if you don't like bones in your food, you can always eat tofu.
Yuck.
No. If you have a meal preparation that accounts for that, smoking or pickling or grinding, they're great fish to eat. The term rough fish first appeared in Minnesota statute in 1907. So it was 117 years ago. And so I would say that the fact that we've made so much progress in the last couple of years is remarkable. And part of the reason that we've been able to make this progress in Minnesota is partnership with the Minnesota DNR. And it's great. Every time I testified at the legislature this year, I had a DNR representative right beside me, also testifying in favor of these reforms. It's been really good working with and collaborating with the Minnesota DNR.
That's awesome.
Nice. Are there any restrictions on how you can fish or how many fish you can catch when it comes to white suckers or suckers more broadly in Minnesota?
Yeah. I mean, technically, you're not supposed to fish by hand.
I've done that before with suckers that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
Bear style below a culvert.
And you can angle them. You can spear them. You can use archery for them. There are certain dates and things like that across the state. There's a limit on them. I think it's right now 50, and we're re-looking at that.
50 and for archery and spearing.
Archery and spearing, right. And it's unlimited for angling. So there's some restrictions, but it's pretty open. We don't allow gill nets for sucker spearing or trap nets to harvest them either.
Okay.
Do you two have any calls to action for the public around this fish, or maybe just any other ways of thinking about this fish?
We've talked about not taking them for granted. And even in Minnesota, where they are really, really widely distributed, there's some concern that they may be declining slightly. We don't know a cause, if that's changes in water quality or in predators or what. Nothing that to be alarmed about, but I think it's just a good reminder that a fish that's this important economically and ecologically shouldn't be taken for granted.
I wholeheartedly agree. All these fish have their place in the ecosystems, and believe it or not, white suckers are an important component in most of our waters. And so the lack of respect is definitely unwarranted from that perspective. There's no doubt about that they are. So in my area, while I'd look at individual lake metrics rather than the broad statewide stuff that Tyler was referring to, and we have populations going up and we have populations going down, and I do want to understand better why it's happening in some of them. Some of them it's kind of obvious and others less so. And they are definitely on my radar from that respectful manner.
I would also say fish passage for any freshwater fish, you know, most of them have some sort of life stage, or so many of them spawn in rivers or streams. And as we were talking about finding white suckers in these really small streams, they probably use smaller streams and will go further upriver than a lot of species of fish. And that then means like a culvert maybe under someone's driveway might be cutting off some particular good habitat, or a bridge with a perched floor to it or something like that. Here in the Twin Cities and the metro area in Minnesota where I am, a lot of streams have historical dams near the mouth. And there's a lot of work that goes on where people are identifying barriers to fish passage in some of these urban streams, which really could use more white suckers, especially as we want to see eagles and people want to see otters and wildlife in their parks. Migrations of white suckers are going to bring that in. And so it's helpful for the public to support habitat work. And, you know, your watershed district may spend money on redoing a bridge or redoing a culvert to allow fish to migrate. And public support's always helpful for those sort of projects.
Yeah, those culverts at roads are really kind of hidden from view. But yeah, that's a big issue that we talk about frequently on the show.
Suckers can't jump. They don't jump over barriers.
What about the jump rocks?
You caught me. I don't know.
I'm not sure either.
We got to do a meetup in Minnesota.
Yeah, you guys got to come visit.
Didn't Solomon David just move to Minnesota fairly recently?
Solomon just moved here last August. I was watching his gar while he moved. I had to stop in and feed him and make sure that they hadn't jumped out of the tank. He just gave a presentation over at the Isaac Walton League chapter where I'm a member, just across the Mississippi from my house. He had like 45 minutes to talk about gars. Everybody was thrilled. Everyone was just like, that was the best presentation. Minnesota, this is the epicenter of native fish conservation.
Cool. Well, thank you both for joining us. This was great. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. And I love talking about the other fish.
We might call you for burbot later. Get out there and live from, discover and enjoy all the fish, especially the white sucker. Thanks for listening to Fish of the Week. My name is Katrina Liebeck, and my co-host is Guy Iroh. Fish of the Week is a production of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Alaska Region Office of Communications. Our production partner for the series is Citizen Race Car. We honor, thank, and celebrate the whole community, individual tribes, states, our sister agencies, fish enthusiasts, scientists, and others who have elevated our understanding and love as people and professionals of all the fish.
They make special harnesses to put around the live suckers for musky fishing. So that the fish can be reused if they don't catch anything with it, rather than impaling the bait with a hook.
I need to get one of those harnesses so that I can like walk a pet fish. Put a little GoPro on his head, but you don't have to have him hooked and bring him back. Wouldn't that be something?
The GoPro camera.
That would be something.